Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level, based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you'll get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy Is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right. Thank you very much, Martin. I appreciate you offering us that disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, we have some new callers tonight, first-time callers, and you have listened to the disclaimer that we offer before every call, and I need to put a name to associate it with the phone number, if I may, that you called in on. The reason for this is because in the line of work that I do, I have others like myself that market information providers, or they themselves are the information providers. And at one time or another, they will be indicted, a trial, and some of them have gone to jail for practicing law without a license. It's very important to me that everyone on this call understands the disclaimer that, you know, and I'm just repeating it, that said that no one here on this call is an attorney or a member of the bar and is unable to give legal advice. If you're here for legal advice, please hang up. It's as simple as that. So if I may, I'm going to unmute the first-time callers here. Just ask for your first name. And frankly, I don't care if you lie about your first name. Doesn't matter to me. I just need a name to associate with this number. So the first caller excuse me, is calling in from New York City. The phone number is ending in 2336. May I have your first name only, please?
Vlad, New York.
That's you. That's you. Go ahead. First name, please.
Vlad.
Spell that.
V-L-A-D.
Oh, Vlad, like in Vladimir. Okay, very good. Thank you, Vlad. Appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Next is from the other side of the world, Atlanta, Georgia, ending in 6535. May I have your first name only, please?
Larry.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate you. All right, one moment, and bring that in. Got two more, and we'll be done. The next is from Prescott, Arizona, ending in 1980.
Brent.
Thank you, Brent. Appreciate you. And then the last one is Hackensack, New Jersey, ending in 4780. First name only, please.
D.C.
D.C. Thank you, D.C. Welcome to the call. All right. So I want to share with you what a judge said in a court case, and then perhaps P.J. will expound upon that, how that works in with what he does and how he can assist you in issues that may develop in the future with you or perhaps you're in the midst of now. Quote, the idea prevails with some, indeed it has found expression in arguments at the bar, that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of the restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to. I take leave to say that if the principles thus announced should ever receive the sanction of the majority of this court, a radical and mischievous change in our system of government will result. We will, in that event, pass from the era of constitutional liberty, guarded and protected by a written constitution, in an era of legislative absolutism. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of government outside the supreme law of the land finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon this court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violation of the principles of the Constitution. End quote. This was the Supreme Court of the United States. This was a dissenting opinion delivered by Justice John Marshall Harlan in the court case in 1901 of Downs versus Bidwell at 182 U.S. 244. So let me turn this call over to PJ, and let's see what his comments are regarding this and how it affects you.
I just turned it on.
Yeah, you're on.
A few minutes ago. So I don't know what your question is. I just turned it on. So just in a nutshell, just ask me. I should be able to figure it out.
Well, it was Downs versus Bidwell, in which Chief Justice Harlan of the Supreme Court of the United States said that we are in effect operating two separate governments, one within the Constitution and one without it through the Congress, is what they were talking about.
Okay. I haven't really come to a full understanding of that either. But I do know that when you do go into a U.S. court, U.S. courts are not the general jurisdiction of the American people. It's a special statutory jurisdiction. It's created by the Constitution. It's not inherent with the people. The default jurisdiction is American common law, or simply common law on American land. That is the default jurisdiction. So that's the jurisdiction where everything starts. Now, the U.S. courts, they have to put on the record why they have administrative authority to, constitutional authority to have jurisdiction of the case. And that is why they always identify the individual as a resident, as somebody that resides in any city, county, or state of the United States. Now, remember, it's not just city, county, or state. It's city, county, or state of the United States. So you can live in a city, county, or state that's not of the United States. We name things for convenience. We name land. You know, let's just say we're talking about right in the middle of America, Nebraska. You know, we name that. But when the U.S. system names it, they're referencing the land that they own in that area. When we name it, we just are thinking of the map that was shown to us in, you know, fifth grade in grade school or kindergarten. So, what I'm getting at is that the default jurisdiction is common law. For them to take jurisdiction, they have to put things on the record, and they usually try to get that from you on the record and also other people. And then we teach our people how to put in documents to challenge that right up front and to show people how they used the trickery to get evidence on the record of administrative authority. All the U.S. courts are administrative courts. None of them are judicial courts in the relationship as a common law court. They all are enforcing congressional written law, which is basically statutes at large. Statutes at large is written law. The United States Constitution is written law. And then all other laws have to abide to and be in conformity to, the, of course, the United States Constitution and the statutes at large. So I didn't, if you notice, I didn't mention revised statutes. Revised statutes are not law. They're just what they claim is a good attempt to codify, which basically means organize the statutes at large. They do that intentionally because the statutes at large usually are clear enough to show that you're not within their jurisdiction to enforce it upon you or your or the activity that you are doing. But when they codify it, when they revise it, then they add words to it and they drop certain sentences, and all of a sudden it, the glove fits. So that's the number one thing that we teach, we present to our clients, our students, is that when the United States comes after you, and there, this, the United States is tyrannical. They are not your friend. They are trying to implement statism in the country. Most of the people listening to this program are searching for an answer to a question that they don't even know exactly what the question is. They just know that there's something terribly wrong with this country. And the definition of freedom in this country, the definition of right to life, liberty, and property, right? The right to life, liberty, and property as defined by the United States courts is far different of the definition found in God's word. And most people in the jury, if you have time to educate them, take an hour to educate them on an issue, they generally always side with the biblical side of it. But when you're in a U.S. court, guess what? They don't allow you to do that. They don't give you the opportunity to inform the jury, because the judge will cut in and say, hey, I'm going to tell the jury what the law is. You can't do that, which is baloney. A trained person in federal court can do pretty well. An untrained person will get shredded, and will not even get their defenses in. If they do have a winnable case, they will make sure that they screw the case up so bad that the guy wins on a technicality instead of on the merits of the case, because they don't want somebody to go into federal court and win a IRS case that the guy had no legal duty to file or pay any funds over to the United States through the IRS. They don't want anybody having a case like that, because people can read those five pages and say, hey, I had the same kind of job as that guy. I worked in the same location as that guy. I can go in and do the same as that guy. They don't want people to learn that. It's organized crime. It's evil. They have an agenda. They believe that statism is actually the savior of a country. And it's in my opinion, it's almost entirely demonic. The freedom, one of the most dangerous places in the world is in the womb of your mother in America. It's between 1/3 and 1/4 of them are killed before they're even born. It's almost no other nation in the world that kills that many babies. We shouldn't kill. Nobody should kill any babies, but we're number one in that too. We're close to it. Some pagan nations don't allow it, but here, the so-called Christian nation, the U.S., the people don't allow it. You bring people together, they oppose it tremendously. But the U.S. courts, they'll promote it with force of the military if need be. So, any questions on that, Michael? You got new people there. Let's kind of find out what their questions are. That would be interesting. We got time for that?
The process here is to press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2, and I'll then unmute your phone. You have an opportunity here to ask direct questions, either about a situation that you're currently in or one that you think may be coming down the pike at you. Doesn't matter. There's a lot of Larrys and Brents and Tommies and so forth in this world, so don't worry about, you know, standing up to in that sense to tell what, you know, to ask your questions. Also, those of you on Freedom's Radio, and we've got a good crowd over there tonight, just simply look at the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side, and you'll see that it's empty. You left-click inside of it and type away your comment or question. Outside of the rectangle, you'll see a place for contact information. So once you fill that in, hit submit, and then I'll give voice on my end as to what's being asked. A lot of people on the call here tonight, I recognize the names, are here from the calls that we do on Saturday with Judge Bernie, and also the Mike G opportunity that's been being worked, et cetera. And you're looking for to learn about how your corporation soul and how your trust can assist you. Well, what we're hearing tonight from PJ is how PJ, as a special agent to the trust, you can give him limited powers of attorney to defend the trust, and then the things that that PJ brings to bear that he talks about, he can actually walk in as a pro per, as a special agent to the trust, and actually argue in court, as opposed to relying upon attorneys that have other objectives in mind. So let me go check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking about pressing star 2 on your keypad and see if we have any questions there yet. No, no questions there. Why don't you go ahead and continue, PJ? Oh, wait a minute. Norman raised his hand. Let's go with Norman, then we'll go back to what you had to say. Go ahead, Norman.
Yeah, what you just said, Michael, is that when I appoint PJ as an agent of the corporation's soul, that he can argue in front of the court on behalf of the corporation's soul.
Correct.
Or you mean that he actually gets up in front of the bar and argues whatever the issue is?
Well, he can if it's necessary. I'm not saying that he will, because 99% of everything that PJ and other information providers I market, they will resolve issues without oral argument. They'll strictly do it by a paper trail. And PJ, you want to address that?
Well, that's one of the last things you want to do is be in a court and argue orally. Some issues you can argue really well orally, but very few of those issues. I work with people that can do very well with that. But I work with other people that they just get nervous and they really mess it up big time. So you want to do it in a written, even in a written format. I mean, you write a 8-page brief and then just save it on your computer and wait 2 days and you go back and read it. Almost always you go, man, why did I write it that way? That's not right. And, you know, how much more so if you're nervous in front of a courtroom. One of the advantages of having an individual come in that's well-trained with the court is that, you know, I've been in court hundreds of times, and
they start realizing, they size you up really quick. You know, if you're a threat to them, if you can actually deliver your promises of challenging various jurisdictions, our pleadings are so well written. We've been told by various judges in the federal circuits that when we write a brief and deliver it to Philadelphia, California federal judges are noticed. Every federal judge in the nation is noticed. We've been told on some of these briefs that are absolutely devastating to them. And all the federal judges are asked to read it and consider aiding in thwarting the brief. So, you know, they're well written because they look at it and they realize that, oh my goodness, this is not good. This is not going to help our railroading this guy in to through the statism courts system. What we do is we emphasize your rights. The Constitution enumerates some of your rights. Some of them. The Constitution clearly says it's not enumerating all of them. It just flat out says it, that this is just some of your rights. So, if there's an issue and the United States shows up, an agent for the United States shows up, or even a man pretending to act for the United States, we can take that in front of a jury and present that to the jury in such a logical fashion where the jury looks at each other like, yeah, that's a right. You know, how in the world can they take that away from us? You know, a lot of people don't understand that the right to bear arms in the United States mindset versus the Bill of Rights, that are rights that are afforded to the free man, they're completely different. The United States is not talking about rights afforded to the free man. They're talking about, when in their courts, if they're talking about it, they're not addressing the free man. They're addressing the franchise man, the U.S. citizen, or an individual that's being treated like a United States citizen, or he's acting on within their territorial jurisdiction. They're not talking about the right to bear arms as a free man. So what we do is we present evidence that that we were in the status of the free man, and they have to produce evidence that we weren't. And we don't have to prove very much of anything. Basically, all we have to do is challenge it. You know, what evidence do you have that I'm not allowed to carry my 357 pistol in that particular piece of land that you're referring to? Land is a space. There might be a house. It might be an open cornfield. It's land is a space, and they have to get their lawyers together, and they have to write out what they rely upon, that you do not have a right to carry that particular device at that location, in that location. Now, if it's federal lands, they're going to come up with probably some pretty good reasons why you can't. If it's not federal lands, they're done. And they don't want to talk about it because they don't want anybody to know that the vast majority of America, about 75% of America, is not within the scope of the written law of the United States Congress or the individual states even. Now the individual 50 states, that's different than the 50 states of the United States. So they're trick you up on that also. So you gotta watch out for that also. So, because they intentionally have a constitution that's very similar to deceive you with these state constitutions, the federal constitution. Anyway, we don't have to be an expert. All we have to be is proficient at keeping the burden of proof on them. And when they bring their response back to us, we go over that with a fine-tuned comb. And we show, because if that land is not of the United States, we can challenge what they rely upon to claim it is. And they don't want to go there. That's a dark alley. They do not ever want to go down. So they generally dismiss the cases without even going to court. Now, most taxation is based on activity. All federal taxation is based on income received domestically in the United States. So income is not really the thing you got to focus on. Domestic is not really the thing you got to focus on. In the United States, you got to focus on. So if you're creating income from selling lemonade, if you're on the side of the road that the United States owns that land, yes, you have to pay tax on your income from that business activity. If it's across the road and you own that land or your neighbor owns that land, there's no federal relationship there for taxes. The landowner can charge you because you can't have a business on his land without being subject to his right to charge you. What we emphasize is you have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Constitution is clear that they cannot govern you without consent. So they have to prove that. You know, where's the consent? Where did I knowingly enter your jurisdiction, your land, and do an activity? And boy, these guys run for the hills. They doctor up the court records. They destroy documents in the federal files. They don't want anybody to know this because it's so devastating to them. It's pretty exciting, actually, because I think it's going to be a big step in the right direction to make a better country for us. You know, if we would repent from our many sins, then God will bless us on many of this stuff. But we don't have to wait for the whole world to repent from their sins. We can actually seek justice in our individual courts.
Okay,
it's pretty exciting because common law is something that they cannot argue it doesn't exist because the Constitution says it does exist. So what we do is we go in with common law principles. The right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is a common law principle. And if you don't think it is, produce the evidence to support what you claim. And then we got the rest of our life to tear that document apart, piece by piece, word by word, comma by comma, and scares the heck out of them. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, Norman, is there anything else?
Well, a little bit of rebuttal on what PJ had to say there. I understand that you do a written form to the judge back and forth as far as you can go, but if there's a jury involved, you actually have to talk orally to the jury. You can't do written statements to them, can you? Or am I incorrect in that?
You can present your former written statements to them if you do it properly. The written statements you're going to present the jury in most cases where the United States is attacking you is where you've legitimately challenge the jurisdiction to prove up elements of jurisdiction. They have to prove that the activity occurred where their written law has force and effect of law. They don't want the jury to learn this. I had an individual that graduated from law school out of Michigan. They came after him in a tax case. Tried to prosecute him. I don't know if it was civilly or criminally. I think it was criminal. and it's been so long, but he said he met with those jurors later on, and 9 of the 12 jurors decided not to file their taxes anymore and to follow his program on. We actually have a program where if you follow it, you require that they produce evidence that you're qualified, eligible, and required to fill out a 1040 tax form, because you don't want to fill out a 1040 tax form unless they tell you that you're qualified, eligible, and required, because for you to do so is a crime. You have a right not to commit a crime. So our clients have never been prosecuted when they follow this process. The only one that's ever been prosecuted is somebody that didn't follow it quite right. They sent our documents to the IRS, but they went ahead and filed anyway. But the IRS wasn't supposed to accept the filing unless they answered the documents that went along with it. Now, our documents are not supposed to go along with a filing, but he did that. That's what he did. Now, that case is possibly going to be one of the biggest cases the nation courts have ever heard recently, we've been told, because it's just devastating to the United States on the simplicity of who owes a federal tax and who does not owe a federal tax, and how do you find out if you do owe a federal tax without putting yourself in danger of jail time, fines, and fees, additional fees.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, go ahead. Next question.
Next is Brian, then followed Brian is Brent. So go ahead, Brian. Brian.
Hello, good morning.
Yeah, I hear you now.
Yeah, PJ, my question was in regard to custody. I've got a lot of friends that have been through many sticky situations. Probably one of the worst was an accusation of molestation, which ultimately after 7 years and a lot of torment and money, you know, he was proven that it was a false accusation. Have you worked on any of those, and are there any, you know, particular complications that you run into?
Yes. There's some very unique ways that you could challenge those cases, and we're working on them right now. We don't really want to give out that information on the air because it's so precision that people will just take the terms that I throw out there and they'll go Google it. And they'll find a website that's probably owned by the government, and they'll say, "Oh, here's a template. I can just follow this and prevail in my case." And I just get when I get in front of the jury, I'll just present this document, and they call us after they've been in jail for 5 years, and I tell them, "Well, the government owns that website. You were deceived." So, but anyway, there are many girls, young girls across the country, they get this empowerment and they start rebelling against their father because their father made them go to church and doesn't let them date the guys they want to date or whatever, and tried to raise them up in a godly way oftentimes. And the girl just goes down and reports that father touched her improperly 7 years ago, and she decided to come out now and say something. Even though there's no other evidence except she's having a bad hair day, and she decided to do this to her dad. And he goes to jail. He sits in jail for a year or two waiting for trial. And it's just terrible. And the U.S. courts, the judges are so fearful of even the impression of letting this guy out of jail that they most all of them get prosecuted, and the women and the girls know this across the nation that it's almost impossible to win an accusation like that before a jury, because they get brain dead juries up there that don't understand the biblical principle of two or three witnesses. Now, if a girl says she was abused 10 years ago, where's the witnesses where you told your friends? You told your mom, you told your sister, told your brothers, told your minister, you told your school teacher. Well, no, I was scared. I didn't tell anybody. The Bible says you can't just stand up now and say that it happened. You had a biblical duty to scream rape back then. You can't wait now. The Bible says you can't. And I didn't realize how important that is in the scriptures to follow the scriptures, but now I see that a lot of this stuff is horribly abused in our court systems now because they don't follow the biblical mandate that the girl must scream. She must scream to have a case. If you don't scream, basically report it immediately, you don't have a case. So, yes, we can help you on that, and I think we can be quite successful. It's these guys are getting 10, 15 years in jail for just because they were disciplining their children and trying to raise them in a godly environment. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah, it does. It's just a very diverse range, I'm sure, that you come across, so I appreciate it.
You got to remember, that we present it in such a way that, hey, Mr. United States Court Administrator, what you guys call the judge, how did you get jurisdiction to prosecute this case when it didn't occur on government land? They run for the hills. They run for the hills because they can't. It's not supposed to go into a statutory court with United States citizens on the jury. It's supposed to go into a common law setting, which is the same courtroom. And the jury's supposed to determine the evidence that gets before them, not the judge. You go into these cases, the judge blocks half the evidence that a man could use to defend himself. It's terrible. It's wicked.
Which is why it drug on for 7 years and cost him so much money, and where in common law things would have been brought out into light much faster.
Yep. An individual that I worked with, he coached his I think it was his sister, either her cousin or sister, in a divorce case. And he said, you put these documents together like this, and you show up in court. And she shows up in court, and she has this little paper that she's been studying. And the attorney starts speaking for her husband, and she says, Your Honor, this is my documents clearly say that unless there's evidence that the statutory court can take over, the United States court can take over, the limited court can take over, it is to remain in the default jurisdiction of common law. In common law, the client cannot be represented. He has to be here speaking. And unless my husband is 27 years old and has blonde hair, that's not my husband. And the judge goes, you're right. So he said that guy had to get up there and defend himself. And he wasn't very good at that. And she did very well in the courtroom in her divorce case. So, and she didn't have to go hire an expensive lawyer because he made it so that she didn't have any money to hire an expensive lawyer in the divorce case, but he did. So, but anyway, in common law, you cannot be represented by an attorney. You have to get up there and you gotta defend yourself. You can't hire somebody else to do it. It's very interesting and much, much less expense. And the judge cannot interfere. Go ahead.
Brian, anything else?
No, sir. Thank you, BJ.
Thank you.
Sure, sure.
And next is Brent. Okay, Brent.
Yeah, hey, PJ. Thanks for doing what you're doing here. I really appreciate it. I had a couple questions about, in general, things that we are that we must misunderstand about the law in our everyday lives that we do, such as getting a passport or on a job application claiming U.S. citizenship or, you know, any number of things, legal dealings with property or anything like that, that we can avoid. You know, what do we do generally that causes us to fall under the jurisdiction of these U.S. federal laws as opposed to common law? And what can we do differently?
You really don't fall under the jurisdiction. You fall under a pretense of jurisdiction. So let's just say that every document that's ever been laid under your nose, you sign, you check the box that you're a U.S. citizen, which you do. For example, you go in and a birth certificate, U.S. citizen. There's a box U.S. citizen on there, generally, especially the new ones. And then the Social Security card, then the passport, and the driver's license. They all have their boxes for U.S. citizen. You can mark all those boxes. It doesn't make you a U.S. citizen. You can raise your right hand in the U.S. court and and swear that you're a U.S. citizen. It doesn't make you a U.S. citizen. So what we have a process that we go through. We force the government to produce the evidence that you're a U.S. citizen. If you're ever in a situation in a courtroom, one of the simplistic things that we do is, if let's just say that you're in the witness chair and you've been sworn in, and the cute lawyer asks you, after flattering how handsome you are, and said, "Sir, you're a U.S. citizen, aren't you?" What would you tell her?
I have no idea.
Now she's smiling. She's beautiful.
I know.
Michael, give it a shot.
Well, I'd say, well, you have to stipulate for me. There's three definitions for United States citizen under Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition. Am I merely the name of a sovereign, a co-sovereign occupying a position analogous to other sovereigns in the family of nations? Or do you see me as a citizen of a territory over which the sovereignty of the United States extends? Or am I a citizen of one of the several states within the freely associated common states, which are united by and under the Constitution? So you have to stipulate for me which one of those three definitions of United States citizen you want me to agree to. And then I can tell you whether I agree or not.
Now, that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is just by simply saying, I have no evidence in my possession I've ever elected to become a United States citizen. Now, if they do bring evidence forward that you're a United States citizen, you can certainly bring in Michael's evidence of law. I don't like to call it case law, but it's evidence of law. So, U.S. citizenship is a big problem in a U.S. court. They will trick almost. We had an individual that was about 80 years old, and he was just horrible, stand on your feet thinking type guy. A friend of mine coached him for about a month how to stay away from questions and never say that you're a U.S. citizen, never say that you're not. Always give that response that I just gave you. And he walks into the courtroom and he's getting ready to sit down, and the judge, he's, "Hey, Bill. Bill, you're a U.S. citizen, aren't you?" And he goes, "Yes, sir." And my friend who coached him for a month stood up and said, "Bill, pack your bags. You're going to jail." He walked out. He walked out of the courtroom because he just told the judge that I owe federal taxes. Otherwise, the burden of proof was on them. But no, he switched the burden of proof. He just gave evidence to the court that he had income domestically within the United States, and he owes the tax. So he went off to jail, I think that same day. or at least that next couple of days after his trial was over, the guy just walked away from him. He says, I can't help this guy. He's an idiot. But if he was my client, I would have went back into court, submitted a brief under new evidence, new information that U.S. citizenship is by form only and it cannot be established merely by a man's beliefs or thoughts or statements. So, and that's true with everything. If you're in court, they'll put a paper on the desk and they'll say, oh, look here, you signed a passport. You signed a U.S. driver's license, a state driver's license. Now, you're trying to tell us you're not a U.S. citizen now, but you checked these boxes. Were you lying then, sir, or are you lying now? So they just try to make you sweat, get you nervous. And all you have to do is say, I have no evidence in my possession I've ever elected to become a United States citizen. Basically, what that's doing is, do you have any evidence? And you can even say that. You look at the jury and say, and then you look back at the prosecutor and say, do you have any evidence? And they'll object. Objection, objection. Because they don't want the jury to be thinking about that. But the judge knows that he just shifted the burden of proof onto the state, and they're in big trouble. We had a case recently where the guy did that very well, and last couple minutes of the trial, they brought in a document that he signed 13 years ago to get his wife out of Japan, I think, Taiwan or something like that, and he signed that he was a U.S. citizen on that document. And they put it in the record, and they didn't even give him an opportunity to object to it or challenge the foundation. And they're trying to use that document for U.S. citizenship. Now, he stopped them. A three-day trial, he stopped them from getting that evidence on the record very well. I coached him. I taught him what they're going to try to do in the courtroom, and he was very astute about it. And they were desperate. They had to get something on the record for U.S. citizenship. And that's what happened. So, but we believe that that was actually a criminal action done by that prosecutor, because the prosecutor should have known that that's not how you evidence. That's not how you put evidence on the record that is going to put this guy in jail for 5 years. That's a crime. It's called exculpatory evidence. He put false evidence before the jury or withheld. I mean, it's wrong for them to put false evidence before the jury knowingly, and it's wrong for them to withhold evidence willingly that would change the outcome of the trial. So both ways, it's bad. I don't know. One's exculpatory. I don't know what the other one's called. One more question. It's about bedtime.
No, that's about it. But I just want to back up on PJ here and say that any time somebody would point to something that says U.S. citizenship, that you can say, well, there's three stipulations as to the definition of U.S. citizen. I've got this one in my mind. Which one do you have? And do you have evidence to support it? Boom.
But I still don't think it's wise to claim any of those, because they're going to ask you, well, which one of those three do you claim? I don't think it's wise to claim any of them.
Well, I'm not claiming any. I want to. You're the one that asserted that I'm a U.S. citizen, and you must have had in mind one of these three definitions, officer. So which one do you assert that I am, and what evidence have you put before the record that I am this citizen or that citizen? You made the assertion. I'm challenging it.
Yes. And then once they produce that evidence, and then you have the rest of your life to examine it. So, yeah, that's smart. Okay, I understand what you're saying.
All right.
Okay.
Anyways,
that's good.
Brett, anything else before we go? Another question?
Yeah, just clarifying. It's like you said at the beginning, so many ways we have already claimed, we have already elected that we are a U.S. citizen. And how do we get
around that?
How do we step that back?
Okay. No. We have briefs that show the form that they have to go through to create a U.S. citizen. It's complicated, but we have it. We've spent some of these arguments have been put together for 45 years by retired federal judges because they knew the country was going in the wrong way, and they put these arguments together to prevail. And some of them have been killed. Some of the material we have, people have been killed over it. We had a group of people five people that put material together, and four of them died mysteriously. So you might think that I'm hiding information from you, but I just can't throw it out there because people misuse it. They misuse it.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Brett. I want to thank everybody for joining us this evening. We've got a great crowd. I think we've doubled our numbers in the last few weeks, and I just want to thank you and appreciate you joining us. Return again this Saturday with Judge Bernie and learn how to own nothing, control everything, have the IRS look at you and say that you're uncollectible. Isn't that beautiful? Best place to be, judgment proof. Until then, good night, everybody, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.